Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, happy Tuesday to you. Glad you're with us here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. It is a little chillier than you had yesterday, about in the 30s heading out the door this morning, and I don't think it's going to get a whole lot warmer today. Nothing like yesterday. It was a glorious day. Hopefully you were able to get outside and take advantage of that. Maybe wash the car or something that you do when it's warmer just so that it can rain on it tomorrow, right? You do need to get that junk off there. I've seen some cars that are a complete mess. Come on, people. Have a little pride. Get your car washed. It's not that hard. $10, right?
Well, it's not good for the paint on your car.
Do you do that? Do you wash your car regularly?
No, but my husband really takes good care of our cars. So I will every now and then go get my car washed, but he often does it for me.
Well, let me tell you how things generally go for me. Like they go for me like they did for the Bitcoin all those years ago when somebody came to me and said, you know, this might be a really good idea. You should do this. And then I didn't do it when it was $2,000 and now it's $100,000, right? I always miss good opportunities like that. So I drive by this club car wash, which is near my house out there off of Highway K. And they had this sign up for the longest time that said new memberships, clean car club, 50% off. And I'm like, you know, I should do that. That way I could pull in anytime I'm near there, get my car washed, one low price. So I finally get around to doing it. I pull in and I'm like, tell me about this half off deal. The guy goes, oh, that ended yesterday. I'm like, perfect. Perfect. That's always my timing on these things. So, you know, I mean, I went ahead and got a $10 car wash anyway, but I could have gotten the $20 car wash for like $10 a month. I don't know what it was. Whatever the deal was.
Sometimes, I'm not saying I do this often, but I have, where sometimes if I'm, say, a regular at a business, I might say, you know what? It's disappointing that I missed that. Is there any chance as a regular customer, a loyal customer, you would consider honoring that and giving that to me today? And obviously, many times they're going to say no, but you don't know until you ask.
Unfortunately, the fine young man, the teenager who was working there or taking my money did not have the power to reinstitute that great deal.
And that's but where you say, me, hey, is your manager here?
He told me maybe it'll come back at some point. I have a feeling
it'll come back the day before you go back to do another one.
I have a feeling it's going to come back at some point. So I'll keep an eye out for that, and maybe I'll do that. So that's a good thing. Maybe I won't miss the deal the next time. All right, coming up, we've got John Rogers is going to be joining us. He is an analyst. He's the director of client strategy at Signal, and he knows a thing or two about the markets. We'll talk about the real impact of these Chinese tariffs that supposedly go into place today, and we'll see how that's going to, raise the cost of your Temu order. I don't know. We'll get to John on that. John Lamping is a different John who's going to join us at the bottom of the hour, former Missouri senator. He wants to talk a little bit about Bill Igel's run for county executive out in St. Charles County. We had Bill on yesterday to announce that. We actually broke the news here in the market yesterday morning, and when the Post-Dispatch did the story on it, they gave credit to some other show that airs after ours. I don't get that. Probably a little bit of hate going on there, but you know, whatever. It doesn't bother me. And then we'll get to another news before the end of the hour. But right now, Carl Middleman, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I like omelets. I mean, I really like omelets. I could eat an omelet at every meal. I like omelets better than sex.
John Kennedy, he went on to say, not really, but his point was, you got to break a few eggs when you're making omelets. And that's kind of what he relates Donald Trump doing to this USAID issue.
The FBI had a great reputation. I think its reputation was really damaged badly, as is DOJ.
But Kash Patel, if he ever gets a final vote, is going to straighten all of that out. Did you see what Ed Martin did yesterday, sending out warnings to anybody that threatens DOJ for they're trying to cut government spending?
We are witnessing a constitutional crisis. We talked about Trump wanting to be a dictator on day one, and here we are.
Yeah, little nails on the chalkboard for you there this morning. Ilhan Omar, why she's even still in Congress, I don't quite understand that. But I don't need her lecturing me on how to run a government.
There are workers that are afraid to go to work because of the potential ICE raids. The Restaurant Association sending out information to restaurants on what exactly they need to do to prepare in the instance that ICE shows up.
You know, here's the thing about it. Don't try to circumvent the law. And that this would, in my opinion, this is no different than one of these private government, non-government organizations that was sending details and pamphlets to people on the other side of the border in Mexico, instructing them on how to avoid the law. Do you remember that? When those 30,000 people a day were lining up on the other side of the border, we found out that there was a group of lawyers who gotten together who support illegal immigration, and they were coaching illegals on what to say when they cross the border. It doesn't matter where you're from or what you're doing or why you came. All you need to do is tell them that you're seeking asylum. Say these words. Come through this opening and say these words, and the Biden administration will say, okay, and they'll slap you on the wrist and they'll give you a court date 5 years out and you're free to go. That's the disaster that was going on there at the southern border. Now we find this situation. Remember all the hubbub on Friday when ICE raided the El Magway out there in O'Fallon? Mm-hmm. Everybody was, I can't believe they're doing this. This is, the humanity. And now we've got the Missouri Restaurant Association sending out letters warning restaurants how to deal with this, employees how to avoid this if it happens. I mean, come on.
They're saying ask for a warrant, but don't interfere and just make sure you have your I-9 paperwork up to date, which basically just proves that, you know, the person's identity and their eligibility, the employment authorization, basically.
So maybe it's a warning to get rid of your illegal employees now. Maybe that's it. So in St. Louis, rumors continue to circulate, it says, over visits from ICE at area restaurants. The only confirmed contact happened at the El Magway, or El Magui, as we used to call it. I don't know, Fallon. But they did detain the guy and then turn him loose. But the Restaurant Association is sharing tips and advice amidst nationwide ICE raids. Immigrants are an important part of the restaurant industry.
But I would agree
with
that.
But those are illegal immigrants.
I was going to say, I'm not going to argue with you that they're an important part of our restaurant industry. That's a factual statement.
Yes.
They are needed in our society for not just the restaurant industry, but many industries.
Yeah. It is an important part. But the difference is illegal. They want to call them immigrants. They're not.
Right.
They're not immigrants. They are illegal aliens.
And
if you employ them, you run the risk of ICE knocking on your door and putting up a sign that says no ICE, and I'm not talking about the kind that go in drinks, is not going to stop somebody from walking in the front door and looking in your kitchen.
And when they didn't find these three people at El Magway had a criminal record, they let them go. But so if someone's illegal, wouldn't they be essentially paying them likely under the table? Wouldn't they have to?
So
I know that in some cases you could be not legal, but you're still paying taxes. That whole thing is confusing to me, how
too.
That all works. I'm trying to wrap my brain around that, but it seems to me that you would, in many cases, like lawn care services, you know, paying them under the table. So that in and of itself is a problem.
That's a problem. And I don't, there are attorneys out there that can explain it better than me, but there are people here who are here illegally, but who can get ITIN numbers through the federal government. And oftentimes these employers, if you walk in with one of those, will take it as evidence that you're legal to work, and even if you're not in the country legally. Like, that they're supposed to run you through E-Verify, but clearly they don't.
So here's another question. So if you go apply for a job, don't you get asked to show a photo ID? So
no.
No?
Not always.
How many jobs have you ever applied for where you're not required to submit some form of identification? I'm trying to think. Is that not a common thing?
I don't know
thing?
That I've ever had
really?
To do that.
I feel like
for a TV or radio station? I mean, they've got your resume tape. They're looking at it. I don't know if anybody ever asked me the question, are you a U.S. citizen? I don't think anybody's ever asked me that.
I guess I just feel like there's so many forms we're just used to checking yes that we don't even think about it.
That's true. All right. Quick break here. We'll try to get answers to some of those questions. Ken, that's a good point. We're going to get to John Rogers coming up. He's with a Signal. He's a director of client strategy there, maybe taking a look at how these tariffs might impact your wallet on your favorite Chinese products. We'll be right back.
Let's just take Super Bowl Sunday, okay? It's going to affect beer, okay? Most of it, Corona here, comes from Mexico. It's going to affect your guac. Because what is guacamole made of? Avocados, both from Mexico. If you have pizza, it's going to affect the cost of cheese.
Oh, Chuck E. Schumer is pretty mad. But, of course, none of that happened because he fails to understand how Donald Trump is using these tariff threats, generally speaking. Mexico and Canada caved pretty quickly. If there are tariffs, they've got at least a 30-day reprieve until anything like that would happen. And my guess is it won't. But when you're the 900-pound gorilla in the room, you have some negotiating power. Can we admit that? We got John Rogers with us this morning. He's a pollster. He's director of client strategy at Signal. And John, welcome back. How are you?
Mark, great to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you have a different take on how Trump is using these tariffs to achieve his goals here?
No, I think the key insight, which you're exactly spot on here, is that the central element for why these tariffs work is that Trump believes in them and is willing to deploy them, and foreign governments and foreign leaders know that, right? If you go back to the 1980s, Trump has been talking about the importance of tariffs and how much he believes they're an effective tool that should be in the arsenal of U.S. policymakers, right? And he's pretty unusual at that. Most American policymakers kind of shy away from tariffs, but Trump fully believes in them. And so because of that, Mexico and Canada kind of realize, like, you know, he's probably willing to put this 25% tariff on there and leave it for a while. So, hey, we better come to the table and try to figure out a way to make this come to an end.
Trump had made some comment that a lot of these mainstream media outlets latched onto was that, you know, Americans could feel some pain from the tariffs. And now, of course, you have China coming back and saying, well, if you impose the tariff on us, we're imposing the tariff on you. What do you think that will actually look like? What kind of a difference do you think some of us could notice on some of the things that we might be buying because of these?
You know, it's funny because Trump is just saying what he really thinks will happen, right? Which is kind of unusual for an American policymaker or for a politician, right? But he's just saying, like, yeah, there's probably going to be a little bit of volatility in the stock market as things are kind of priced in over the next couple of months. If all three of those tariffs had stayed in place. And now, of course, the tariffs with Mexico and Canada are paused. And I think the tariff on China is likely to continue. But even if that does cause some, you know, even if there's a little bit of up and down the economy, you know, it seems like things are going gangbusters overall. But I think that the American voters understand, especially with China, they're the main adversary of the world, and they are fine with tariffs being levied against China for that reason.
Well, it's, you know, in the case of China, far more than obviously Mexico or Canada, it's about stopping fentanyl. And most of the fentanyl that's coming across the southern border is being produced in China. And I don't know if the Chinese government just looks the other way. I mean, I'm really wondering, ultimately, I'd love to know Trump's thoughts on how China can stop that. I mean, can they just say you're not going to do it anymore? Can they control their ports more? I mean, any thoughts on that, John?
The reality is the Chinese government is all for trying to destabilize the American scene. And in my opinion, that also includes TikTok. But there's a lot of different elements of that where the Chinese government is fine with the American political system being slightly destabilized. Does China want their, you know, fentanyl drug traffickers to operate just at random in its own country? No, but if there are some fentanyl drug traffickers that use China as a base of sorts, and then the drugs wind up being exported to North America, I don't think that's going to be on the top five things that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to end. you know, our polling has shown that 70% of American voters say that rebuilding and revitalizing the American manufacturing base and ending the outsourcing of jobs is extremely or very important to them as an issue. And so Trump is playing on that, and I think that most people are going to be fine with it.
I wonder what, if you've done any polling or what the polling would say. I'll bet the majority of Americans, when they find out what USAID has actually been spending their tax dollars on, are going to be shocked by that. And when I saw the group in D.C. protesting these cuts yesterday, I'm like, whose side are you on?
Yeah, I think the investment and the giving away of American taxpayer dollars to foreign governments and foreign aid, I think that there's a lot of voter skepticism about that, certainly yes. In the Republican Party, but even among independents and even among some Democratic voters. And voters are okay with saying, hey, you know what, let's pause this. And then let's evaluate the tens of millions of dollars that American taxpayer dollars are going to dozens of countries all across the globe. And then let's do an audit. Let's evaluate that. And let's see, like, okay, are there 20 to 25% of these countries that maybe they don't actually need American taxpayer dollars anymore?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I've been enjoying watching it myself. John Rogers with Signal, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Mark, Cam, great to be with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your thoughts on that. Yeah, I've got to play that soundbite for you here coming up, maybe at the top of the hour. But it is Caroline Leavitt spelling out all of the wasteful spending, just a few examples of it. And every time I hear it, it's something new, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. They spent $47 million on what? Condoms in Gaza is the most outrageous one so far. There's a long list of things that are that bad or worse. We're going to get to all that for you coming up. Up next, our friend John Lamping joins us. We'll talk about the race for St. Charles County Executive. We'll be right back.
I am very comfortable telling you this, and all your listening audience this morning, that it's time for me to come home. And what that means for me is I'm coming back to the place that has supported me consistently for more than a decade through three different races, twice for state senate and once for governor. They also supported me. That's the people of St. Charles County, and it's my intention over these coming weeks to set up the infrastructure and begin a conversation once again with the people of St. Charles County and ask them if they would entrust me to be the next county executive of the third largest county in the state of Missouri.
All right, that was former Senator Bill Igel on this program yesterday, breaking the news that he will be running for county executive. I think that means there are three people in the race out there in St. Charles County right now, and we've got former Senator John Lamping on the phone this morning, maybe to get a little bit of reaction to that. John, how are you?
Good morning, Mark, Kim. Nice to be with you both.
Yeah, good to have you on. You know, I was watching with interest the over the weekend the vote for the Missouri Republican chair that former Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder ended up beating Bill Igel in a pretty close vote. My understanding is a few votes switched at the last minute, so I don't know what all was going on there. But there was some belief on Friday that Bill Igel might be the next Missouri Republican chair, and obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, even before Bill announced yesterday, I thought that this morning we would talk about what happened over the weekend. It's part of a theme and something we've talked about many times on this show, that, you know, the politically active group of people that support Bill, that, you know, Bill got almost a third of the vote in the governor's race, that in my mind represents people who are your listeners, they're right. Grassroots, they're issue driven. They're not happy with government as it exists in Missouri, but unfortunately they're kind of a solid 35% and seemingly not a whole lot more. And I think that the vote over the weekend, though, your listeners should understand that the vote over the weekend was a bunch of political insiders. It's the people who are elected to lead the party at the precinct level, essentially, and that again, Bill fell short and had 40% or so of the vote. And so, you know, what people need to understand is that, you know, the Governor Kehoe is really just an extension of the Blunt family. The Blunt family is the political machine in Missouri. They don't really bother to spend too much time over here on this side of the state other than to, you know, collect corporate clients. But They don't pay too much attention to the people, but Bill is kind of our last hope in terms of fighting against that machine. And so that leads us to the St. Charles County race. And I think this is going to be a barn burner for sure. You know, obviously it's not until August of 2026, but I think what you're going to see is it's no secret that Mike Elam has done everything he could to position himself as an ally of Kehoe's. And this is going to essentially be, by proxy, it's going to be Bill versus Kehoe, in that I think Kehoe will marshal millions and millions of dollars into the Elam camp. And again, Kehoe representing, you know, the blunt machine, and it'll be their final chance to try to knock Bill off. Bill certainly has to win this race to have a future. He can't lose in his own backyard. So I think we're looking at a really dynamic, exciting race. Bill is such a great campaigner, and there's no doubt in my mind he got off the phone with you yesterday and started campaigning, and he'll campaign throughout, and I think he'll win. I know polling right now shows him at least up by 30, if not more, but Elam will have access to millions and millions of dollars because there's forces in the state that want to see our version of Republican Party lose its leader, Bill Igel.
Right.
I that feels so dirty to me. I understand that happens all the time. And I wonder, you know, obviously Missouri is a red state. I know that's not always been the case. But do you think Missouri as a whole is ever going to be ready for a so-called disruptor like Bill Igel? Or are we always going to lean more toward the moderate conservative like a Kehoe in this case?
Well, Missouri's long, long history is of a Democratic state. Most of the 20th century, it was Democrat, but it was a blue dog Democrat. It was conservative Democrat, pro-life, pro-gun. Baptist was the prominent religion, but Democrat. And what they believe in, what most of the state really needs, is they need government to build their roads in rural areas, to pay for their schools in rural areas. And that's why most of the time, it's the rural areas that have been in the majority. It just so happens that the rural areas today are Republican. They're not reformers. They're not super conservative because they need so much from government, but nonetheless, they vote Republican. St. Charles County is only about a 10% Republican county when you look at the presidential race. And most of these other counties around the rural counties where Republicans are in control, it's 35, 40, 50% vote in the presidential race for Trump. So it's a hard road to climb. I don't think it'll get there, but it'll take a very strong leader from either this area, one of the collar counties here, St. Charles County, Franklin County, or down on the southwestern Missouri. If you look at the congressional delegation, you got Eric Burleson and Bob Onder. Those are the two most conservative, most reform-oriented Congress people, and that tells you those are the parts of the state that believe that way. But then the rest of them, the majority of the Congress people, are much more moderate.
Yeah, I don't want to not mention his name. I know Jason Law, the Lake St. Louis mayor, is also running, apparently. I saw where he got a $100,000 contribution from somebody the other day. It was in the Post article. So, I mean, but the early polling, what was sent to me yesterday, very early, obviously, because they haven't even had filing yet, showed Bill with 40% of the support. There was still almost 50% undecided. But he did have an early 30-point lead. I think that's name recognition alone might have a lot to do with that, John.
Oh, for sure. Jason Law, the more people in the race, the better it is for Bill. Bill's 40% of the people who have voted for Bill in the mayor's race are going to vote for him in the county executive race. And the fact Jason Law is the mayor of Lake St. Louis, and he was on the board of aldermen there, I don't know his politics. He hasn't let his politics be known. But to the extent that he's more of a mainstream Republican, he'll take votes away from Mike Elam. What the Elam camp will do is they will do everything possible to try to draw out another candidate who is who's a lot like Bill Igel. You know, so they'll try to find somebody maybe in the House in Missouri, or they'll try to find a candidate that will take votes away. I think if it was Bill versus Mike Elam straight up, I think Bill would win. But ironically enough, the more people that are like Mike Elam, I think Jason could very much be that way, then I don't think less than 40% of the people are going to vote for Bill Igel. Yeah. And then so that plurality will be all that he needs. It'll be a race there in 2025 where it'll mostly be a lot of people doing grassroots campaigning. Obviously, no one spends any money. But when the time comes, when we get to the summer of next year, if Elam has any chance at all of taking out Bill, I think you'll see huge money come in from all around the state to try to take Bill Igel out. That machine is there, and it doesn't want anything to do with a politically activist type approach to government.
Right, right. We're talking to former Senator John Lamping. Back to the state GOP race for a minute. I saw Kinder's comments afterwards saying that Bill ran a good race. I understand he was very active in reaching out to a lot of these delegates. I didn't reach out to anybody, and I didn't make any promises. And he was also asked about... it's my belief and the belief of a lot of people at the grassroots level that you should have to answer a questionnaire if you're running for office, and it's how you vet your candidates. It's how you know, you ask somebody if they're pro-life. I mean, if you're not pro-life, I don't think you should be running as a Republican candidate. You should be allowed to ask those questions. Peter Kinder is opposed to that. And there were a lot of reasons why I thought Igel would have been a breath of fresh air as head of the Missouri GOP. That's just one of them.
Throughout most of the time that Republicans have been in the majority these past 20, almost 25 years now, the Missouri GOP means almost nothing in reality. Like on the year-to-year, year-in, year-out, it's more of they have to send delegates to the conventions and things like that, and they have lots of long, boring meetings. And it's candidates themselves that run campaigns. The idea that the Missouri GOP would help you or not help you, it was quite the rebuke, though, of Kehoe. It really speaks to where we are. Normally, when you ascend to the governor's office, the governor pretty much just picks those people. They pick the head of the Missouri GOP and really all of the candidates, all of the lesser offices too, and the party just says fine, the governor gets what the governor wants, kind of like cabinet appointments at the federal level. But there's this, you know, Bill and the group of his supporters is a really strong, vocal, active, thoughtful minority of the party, and they just wouldn't let Keogh get that win. And that's why we're going to have this the showdown next summer, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it sure will. John Lamping, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Oh, have a good day. Yep. Talk to you soon.
Great having you on. Appreciate your insight on all that. I had Peter Kinder on my show for years, but I am disappointed with how that race turned out because, once again, like the governor's race, I think you could have had somebody in that office who's going to be a disruptor and demand certain things, and it remains to be seen if Mike Kehoe will be able to pull that off. I don't know. All right, coming up, we're going to get to another news with Ethan next hour. Todd Pyro, host of Fox and Friends First. I've already seen him on there this morning on Big Fox. We'll get him on the air in about 7:20. We'll be right back.
You know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news,
a new Buffy the Vampire Slayer revival is in development at Hulu, with Sarah Michelle Gellar expected to reprise her iconic role as Buffy Summers. Oscar-winning director Chloe Zhao, either
way. Mark's favorite movie.
No Man Land.
Oh,
she's
going
to direct the pilot. the project is backed by 20th Television and Searchlight TV, with executive producers Geller, Zhao, and Dolly Parton.
Is Buffy living out of an RV now, traveling the country? What's she doing?
She wasn't going to do it. They were going to do it without her.
Yes.
With other people. And then she worked on Dexter, Original Sin. And she's like, these reboots aren't so bad.
Yeah, all that revenue coming in.
All that money coming
in. Let's do it.
And
let's
so
get
now
some more
she's
money.
She's going to do it.
Well, she's not been doing a lot, right?
Not really.
No. Yeah, I think so.
Hanging out with her husband. That's about it.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
If you're a fan of Morrissey, he's announced a 2025 U.S. tour. It's going to start April 26th in Reno. It'll make its way through St. Louis May 12th at the Factory. Tickets will go on sale on February 6th. That's the pre-sale. Regular tickets go on sale on the 7th.
That show will sell out.
It will sell out.
Well, the factory doesn't hold all that many people to begin with, right?
It doesn't.
No, I don't know what the capacity is, but...
Isn't it a few thousand?
Yeah, I would think.
I think it's 3,000, too.
Isn't he one of the ones that always, like, just abruptly cancels tours,
he's
though?
He's a jerk.
Just saying.
He's more... So, Mark, you probably don't know any of his songs.
I would say that's a good bet. Maybe if I heard one, I might recognize it.
Yeah, I might know a Smith song.
He might know a Smith song, but not anymore.
I am not.
They're depressing.
I am not. I'm just. I've never been an audiophile. I haven't. I'm just. I'm interested in other things.
Yeah. They're mopey and British.
Very mopey. Thank you.
Yeah, yes. That's fair.
that's Morrissey and Smith songs in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Twix is celebrating the power of two with the Super Bowl contest featuring the Ying Yang Twins. During the game on February 9th, fans can participate in Twix second screen stare down for a chance to win two solid gold bars. Now to play, users must visit Twix.com during commercial breaks and stare at the screen. That's it. That's all you got to do. The longer they participate, the more entries they earn. One lucky winner will randomly be selected after the game. Got to be 18 to do it.
Boy, if I'm the other advertiser spending several million dollars for a spot, I'm a little pissed off at Twix.
You think?
There's going to be a lot of people staring at their computer and not paying attention to the other commercials.
See, that's actually really, really smart.
I think that's what they're doing.
Because you're driving up interest on your website, the number of views, and then on top of that, you're taking eyes away from any other company that would be a competitor.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
The people at Reese's are pissed.
I would play you a Ying Yang song, but we can't.
It's okay. Thank you.
So have you ever seen those posts on X or Facebook or anywhere where somebody doesn't know how to do math and says Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos should just give away their fortune to everyone in America and we'd all be rich?
Yeah.
Well, somebody sat down and figured it out. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Warren Buffett, if they all combined their wealth together and gave it away to people, how much would we each get?
Are you talking about, you're talking worldwide?
No, just the U.S.
Just the United States.
Yep. Hmm.
Well, we have 340 million people, so whatever however many of those billions would be divided by 340 million. What's it
track those three guys.
Yeah.
Because they already have.
I'm not going to try to do math right now.
$2,389.52 is what everybody would get.
See?
So basically, it's what we got during COVID.
Yeah.
What was it, $1,200?
Child tax credit or whatever they sent out. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So there you go. You could live off that $2,000 for the rest of your
life.
Would
barely pay your personal property tax for most people at the end of the year.
Right? Somebody put, another paycheck. That's about it. Good job.
Yeah.
It looks like nitrous oxide, a sedative commonly used in healthcare, has gained popularity as an inhalant among teens and young adults, raising concerns among doctors and drug abuse experts. Social media platforms like TikToks have normalized the misuse, with viral posts showing students at fraternity houses using nitrous oxide, often in large quantities. The substance, known as whippets, is easily accessible through online retailers and smoke shops. So... there you go. That's your new drug of the day.
Killing, like alcohol and regular drugs don't kill your brain cells enough. You have to use nitrous oxide.
Mm.
Didn't they used to use that in cars, like to make your? Didn't you have a nitro on your car?
That's nitrous.
I don't know if it's the same.
Makes
stuff.
It go faster. Fast
yeah,
and furious.
I don't know if it's the same thing or not. But go ahead. You could stand behind it.
It looks like new national test scores reveal ongoing declines in American students' literacy and math skills. This is following the COVID-19 pandemic. Fourth and eighth graders scored an average of 5 points lower in reading compared to 2019, with lower performing students seeing even steeper declines. Experts cite factors like decreased engagement with reading and increased absenteeism as contributors.
I loved the stat last week that there were 30 school districts in the state of Illinois, most of them around Chicago,
I saw this,
where zero students were at expected reading levels. Yep. At grade level, reading level. Zero students were at grade level.
Well, how much of that would be affected if we didn't have COVID? Because so many students, I mean, I'm sure there would be plenty of students who still were not at the appropriate reading level.
Yeah.
But that really was an issue, COVID, when kids were forced to learn from their computer screen for 8 hours a day. And it they can't catch up.
You know, when I did that, and it's still your thunder here, Ethan. When I did that fundraiser for the Francis House Schools the other day, there was a teacher there, and the teacher raised his hand and said, "I just want to point something out. You know, teachers aren't—they don't get to choose their students. Their students are assigned to their classroom, and you don't always have control over who you're getting. I mean, and I think maybe that's got something to do with it. In some of these districts where there's no parental input in some cases and they have no home support, I'm sure that makes an impact. But 0%, come on.
Think about how many parents might never really read books to their kids. I mean, we read books to Easton multiple a day.
Wow. Yeah, that's shocking. It is. All right, Ethan, thank you. Appreciate that. Coming up, we got Jason Chaffetz joining us, Fox News contributor, host of the new Jason in the House podcast. And we're going to talk to him about tariffs and all the winning Trump's been doing the last 2 weeks at about 8:20.
Get more at 971talk.com.